expansive than this list. A's and B's, an abbreviation referring to episodes of apnea, breathing lapses, and bradycardia, too slow heartbeat. Asphyxia, a condition in which not enough oxygen is getting to the organs of the body. The brain and the kidneys are the organs most sensitive to a lack of oxygen. This may have been a problem just before birth in some preemies, making their delivery at that time an urgent matter to prevent or minimize organ damage. Aspiration, the breathing of fluids, such as formula, stomach fluids, meconium, into the lungs. Aspiration could lead to pneumonia and other lung problems. Bagging, breathing for the baby, filling the lungs with air by squeezing a bag that is connected to an endotracheal tube or attached to a mask fitted over the face. Billy lights, blue fluorescent lights used to treat jaundice, aka phototherapy. Blood gas, a blood test to check levels of oxygen and carbon dioxide in the blood. Blood gases need to be in proper balance for baby to grow properly. Blood gases are checked regularly for preemies on breathing machines. Broviac, see central catheter. CBC, or complete blood count, a blood test to count the red cells that carry oxygen, white blood cells that fight infection, and platelets that prevent bleeding in the blood. Central catheter, or central line, a small, thin plastic tube through which fluids are given or removed from the body. Broviac catheters are usually placed in the upper chest to reach the vena cava, the large blood vessel in the center of the body. PICC lines, percutaneously inserted central catheters, are usually threaded through a vein in the arm. Umbilical catheters can also be inserted into the vein or artery of the umbilical stump after birth. Chest tube, a small plastic tube placed through the chest wall into the space between the lung and the chest wall to remove air or fluid from this space. Cyanosis, a description of color changes to the skin when there's not enough oxygen in the blood. When a baby is cyanotic, the skin will turn blue. Echocardiogram, an ultrasound of the heart. Endotracheal tube, ET tube, a plastic tube that goes through baby's nose or mouth into the windpipe and is then connected to a ventilator, breathing machine, to help baby breathe. Extubation, removal of the ET tube. Hematocrit, crit, a blood test to see how many red blood cells there are. Intravenous, IV, a small plastic tube placed into one of the baby's veins as a means to deliver fluids, nutrition, and medication. Intubation, the insertion of an endotracheal tube. Lumbar puncture, spinal tap, a test in which spinal fluid is drawn through a small needle placed in the lower back. The spinal fluid is then tested to check for problems, bacteria, infection, and so on. Meconium aspiration, the inhalation of meconium, baby's first poop, into the lungs, which can lead to problems. Nasal cannula, soft plastic tubing that goes around a baby's head and under the nose, where there are openings, prongs, to deliver oxygen. Neonatologist, a pediatrician who has special training in newborn intensive care. Oxyhood, a clear plastic hood placed over the baby's head that supplies oxygen. PICC line, see central catheter. Pneumothorax, when air from baby's lungs leaks out into the space between the lungs and chest wall. This could lead to a lung collapse, treated with a chest tube. RDS, infant respiratory distress syndrome, is a syndrome in premature infants caused by developmental insufficiency of pulmonary surfactant production and structural immaturity in the lungs. It can also be a consequence of neonatal infection. Sepsis, an infection of the blood. Such an infection can begin as an infection elsewhere in the body and then spread to the blood. Likewise, blood infection can spread to virtually any organ in the body. Surfactant, a substance that keeps small air sacs in the lungs from collapsing. Natural surfactant is lacking in preemies, which is why artificial surfactant is often given to preemies in the NICU. Transfusion, donated blood that is given to the baby when baby is anemic, has too few red blood cells, or has lost too much blood. Umbilical catheter, a thin tube that is inserted into a blood vessel in the belly button to draw blood or give fluids, medication, or nutrients. Ventilator, mechanical breathing machine. Being part of your baby's team. Remember that you are one of the most important partners in your baby's care. Educate yourself as much as possible about the NICU's equipment and procedures, and familiarize yourself with your baby's condition and progress. Ask for explanations of how ventilators, machines, and monitors are helping your baby. Request written information that explains the medical jargon you'll be hearing. Learn as much as you can about the routine, visiting hours and visitor restrictions, when nurses change shifts, when doctors make rounds. Find out who will give you updates on your baby's progress and when you'll get them. Give the staff your cell phone numbers so they can always reach you.
Portrait of a preemie. The parents of full-term newborns may be surprised when they first see their babies. The parents of preterm infants are often shocked. The average preemie weighs between 1,600 grams, about 3.5 pounds, and 1,900 grams, about 4 pounds 3 ounces at birth, and some weigh considerably less. The smallest can fit in the palm of an adult hand, and have wrists and hands so tiny that a wedding band could be slipped over them. The preemie's skin is translucent, leaving veins and arteries visible. It seems to fit loosely because it lacks a fat layer beneath it, making it impossible for baby's temperature to self-regulate. And often it is covered with a fine layer of prenatal body hair, or lanugo, that has usually been shed by full-term infants. Because of an immature circulatory system, you may notice some skin coloring changes when you touch or feed your baby. Your little one's ears may be flat, folded, or floppy because the cartilage that will give them shape has yet to develop. Preemies often lie with arms and legs straight rather than classic newborn style, curled or tucked in, not only because their muscles still lack strength, but because they never had to fold to fit in a cramped uterus, as full-term babies do. Sexual characteristics are usually not fully developed. Testicles may be undescended, the foreskin in boys and the inner folds of the labia in girls may be immature, and there may be no areola around the nipples. Because muscular and nerve development are not complete, many reflexes such as grasping, sucking, startle, rooting may be absent. Unlike term babies, a preemie may cry little or not at all. He or she may also be subject to periods of breathing cessation, known as apnea of prematurity. But the physical characteristics of preemies that make up this portrait are only temporary. Once preterm newborns reach 40 weeks of gestation, the time when, according to the calendar, they should have been born, they very much resemble the typical newborn in size and development. Handling a long NICU stay.
The doctors say my preemie will have to spend many weeks in the hospital. How long is it likely to be, and how will I be able to handle her long stay?
Chances are you'll be able to bring your baby home from the hospital at about the same time you would have if she had arrived at term, about 37 to 40 weeks gestational age. Though if your preemie faces other medical challenges besides being small, the stay may be extended. But no matter how long your baby's hospitalization ends up being, it will likely feel even longer. To make the most of that time and to even help it pass somewhat faster, try striking up a partnership. Parents of a preemie often begin to feel that their baby belongs less to them and more to the doctors and nurses who seem so competent and do so much for her. But instead of worrying that you can't measure up to the staff, try teaming up with them. Get to know the nurses. Easier if your baby has a primary nurse in charge of care at each shift, which is likely, the neonatologists and the residents. Let them know you'd like to do as much of the baby care as possible. Diapering, swaddling, bathing, which can save them time help you pass yours, and help you feel less like a bystander and more like an involved participant in your little one's care. Getting a medical education. Learn the jargon and terminology used in the NICU. Ask the in-charge nurse to show you how to read your baby's chart. Ask the neonatologist for details about your baby's condition and for clarification when you don't understand. Parents of preemies often become experts in neonatal medicine very quickly, throwing around terms like RDS and intubation as easily as a neonatologist. Being a fixture at your baby's side. Some hospitals may let you move in, but even if you can't, you should spend as much time as possible with your baby, alternating shifts with your spouse as needed. This way, you'll get to know not only your baby's condition, but your baby as well. If you have other children at home, however, they'll also need you now. Making your baby feel at home. Even though the isolette's only a temporary stop for your baby, try to make it as much like home as possible. Ask permission to put friendly-looking stuffed animals around your baby and take pictures, perhaps including stimulating black and white enlargements of snapshots of mommy and daddy, to the sides of the isolette for her viewing pleasure. Ask if you can pipe in a recording of your voice when you're not there, or soft music. Remember, however, that anything you put in the baby's isolette will have to be sterilized and obviously can't interfere with life-sustaining equipment. Readying your milk supply. Your milk is the perfect food for your premature baby. Until she's able to nurse, pump milk for indirect feedings and to keep up your supply. Pumping will also give you a welcome feeling that you're doing something. Hitting the shops. Since your baby arrived ahead of schedule, you may not have had time to order furniture, layette items, and other necessities. If so, now's the time to get online and get that shopping done. If you feel superstitious about filling your home with baby things before she is discharged from the hospital, fill up the cart, but don't complete the order until you're closer to the homecoming. Especially because you won't know what size to buy those diapers or baby clothes in just yet. You'll not only have taken care of some necessary chores, but will also have filled some of the long hours of baby's hospitalization and made a statement, at least to yourself, that you're confident you'll be bringing your new bundle home soon. The emotional roller coaster.
I'm trying to be strong for my son while he's in the NICU, but I'm scared, overwhelmed, and feeling out of control.
Most parents whose babies are in the NICU experience a wide spectrum of ever-changing emotions, which can range from shock to anger to frustration, stress to fear to numbness, disappointment to confusion, intense sadness to equally intense hope, all of which are valid, understandable, and normal. You may feel overwhelmed by all the medical equipment attached to your baby and the constant activity of nurses and doctors. You may be frightened of the procedures your baby is undergoing or frustrated by feelings of helplessness. You may feel disappointed that your little one isn't the dimpled, adorable, full-term baby that you'd been expecting and envisioning throughout your pregnancy. Frustrated that you can't take him home to begin your life together, and guilty about both sets of emotions. You may also feel guilty for not feeling happy about your baby's birth, or guilty about not being able to keep the pregnancy going longer. Even if there was absolutely nothing you could have done to prevent your baby's prematurity, which most often there isn't, you may feel unsettled at the uncertainty of your baby's future, particularly if he is very small or sick. You may even unconsciously distance yourself from your preemie for fear of becoming too attached, or because you find bonding difficult to accomplish through the portholes of an isolette. Or you may feel unexpectedly strong feelings of love and attachment, deepened instead of challenged by the ordeal you're both enduring. You may be angry at yourself for your reactions, at your partner for not reacting the same way you are, at your family and friends for not understanding what you're going through, or for acting as if nothing has happened, at your OB for not preventing this. Confusing these emotions further may be the fact that they may often conflict or fluctuate wildly. For instance, leaving you feeling hopeful one minute, hopeless the next, deeply in love with your baby one day, afraid to love him the next. Compounding them may be the physical exhaustion that comes from keeping a round-the-clock vigil at your baby's bedside, which may be more debilitating still if you haven't yourself recovered from delivery or are suffering from nipples painfully cracked from pumping. Coping with these emotions may be extremely difficult, but keeping the following in mind may help. What you're feeling, saying, and doing is perfectly normal. Such extreme and sometimes contradictory emotions are experienced by nearly every parent of a premature baby at some time or another, though you may often believe that no one else has ever felt the way you do. There is no one right way to feel. Your emotions may differ from those of your partner, the parents of the baby in the next isolette, or from other parents of preemies you've talked to. Everyone will react to it a little differently, and that's normal too. Remember too, as you speak to other parents of preemies, and you should, that they may be feeling all of the same unsettling emotions on the inside, but those feelings may not show on the outside. Deep emotions often stay deep inside. Emotions need expressing. Keeping your feelings inside will only compound them and make you feel more isolated. Let the NICU staff know what your feelings and fears are. Not only will they understand what you're going through, since helping parents is almost as important a part of their job as helping babies, but they may offer insights that can help you cope. You and your partner need each other. You can each gain strength by leaning on the other and can be more effective as a team than individually. Open communication can also help keep the stress inherent in parenting a preemie or having a sick baby from hurting your relationship. Support best comes from those who know. Try talking with other parents in the NICU. You'll find that they also feel alone, unsure, and scared. Friendships are easily formed in the NICU because other parents need you as much as you need them. Many hospitals make support available through groups run by the NICU social worker, or can hook you up with support families whose babies have left the NICU, especially through online groups. No one can relate better to what you're experiencing and share more wisdom and empathy than parents who've experienced it themselves. Also be sure to tap into the message boards at whattoexpect.com to look for support from those who know. A mobile source of support will be especially invaluable during those long days and nights of waiting at the NICU. It will take time. You probably won't be on an even emotional keel at least until your baby's on an even physical one. Until then, you'll have good days and bad days, usually corresponding to your baby's ups and downs. If you're a brand new mom of a preemie, your physical recovery and normal hormonal fluctuations can intensify feelings of all kinds. Reminding yourself that your feelings are normal, that all parents of preemies ride an emotional roller coaster at least until their babies are safely home and completely well, and sometimes even longer than that, won't make the feelings go away, but it will help give you the perspective you need to cope with them. Of course, if you or your partner are feeling sadness, hopelessness, anxiety, or an inability to function that's too significant to attribute to the very normal stresses of being the parent of a preemie, it could be that you're also dealing with postpartum depression. Remember, to take the best care possible of your little baby, you'll need to take the best care possible of yourself.
Preemies by category. Your preemie's care, length of stay in the NICU, and chances of complications will depend on the category of preemie he or she is. In general, the earlier your baby was born, the longer and more complicated a stay in the NICU. Near-term or late preterm preemie, born at about 33 to 37 weeks gestation. Babies born near-term are less likely to have severe breathing problems, thanks to some development of lung-maturing surfactant in utero, but may still have blood sugar problems as well as a slightly elevated risk of infection. They are more likely than full-term babies to have elevated jaundice levels requiring at least brief phototherapy. These preterm babies may also have some difficulty feeding, but the vast majority of near-term preemies have a short stay in the NICU, if at all, with few complications. Moderate preemie. Born at about 28 to 32 weeks gestation. Many babies born before 31 weeks will have breathing difficulties and will likely need to be placed on a respirator for a while. And since babies born this early didn't get the immunity protection boost from mom during the last trimester, they're more prone to infections in general, as well as hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, and hypothermia. They have a hard time staying warm. Moderate preemies usually won't be able to start with breastfeeding or bottle feeding right away, and they may also encounter feeding problems when they are ready for nipple feedings. Extreme preemies, born before 28 weeks gestation. These tiniest of babies are at highest risk of breathing difficulties because their lungs are so immature and not yet ready to function independently. Extreme preemies are also at highest risk of complications of prematurity, infections, hypoglycemia, and hypothermia. Premature babies aren't categorized only by gestational age. A preterm baby's health and course of treatment in the NICU also has a lot to do with size at birth. Usually, the smaller the baby, the greater the chances for a longer hospital stay, and possibly for complications. Very low birth weight are those babies born weighing less than 3 pounds 5 ounces. Extremely low birth weight are those babies born weighing less than 2 pounds 3 ounces. Micropreemies are the smallest and youngest preemie babies, born weighing less than 1 pound 12 ounces, 800 grams, or before 26 weeks gestation. Happily, advances in medical care have improved the outcomes of preterm babies and micropreemies, and even the smallest of babies have a much greater chance of survival. According to some studies, more than 50% of babies born at 23 weeks survive, more than 3/4 of babies born at 25 weeks survive, and more than 90% of babies born at 26 weeks survive. Give yourself a break. Of course you want to spend every moment you can at your baby's side in the NICU, cuddling kangaroo style, helping with feeds, whispering lullabies, holding those tiny hands through the isolate portholes, and if you're a mom, pumping breast milk to nourish your precious preemie. But every parent needs a break, and no one needs it or deserves it as much as a parent of a preemie. So take one and don't feel guilty about it. Whether you break for a movie with your partner, dinner with friends, a jog around the lake, or a few hours to browse for baby's layette, you'll return feeling less stressed, refreshed, and better equipped to handle the days ahead. Plus, you'll have learned an important lesson about being a parent. Taking the best care of your baby means taking time for yourself, too.
Breastfeeding.
I've always been determined to breastfeed my baby. And since she was born at 28 weeks, I've been pumping milk to be fed to her through a tube. Will she have trouble switching to nursing later?
So far, so good. From birth, your baby has been provided with the best possible food for a premature newborn, her mommy's milk, in the only way such a tiny baby is able to take nourishment, through a tube. Naturally, you're concerned that she be able to continue to get this perfect food once she graduates to suckling. But you have little to worry about. Research finds that premature infants weighing as little as 1,300 grams, or nearly 3 pounds, and as young as 30 gestational weeks, may be able to suckle at the breast and are more successful at it than they are with the bottle. Once you do put your baby to the breast, you'll want to make conditions as conducive to success as possible. Here's how. Read all about breastfeeding before getting started. Also enlist the help of a lactation consultant. Hopefully there will be one on staff to help you out. Be patient if the neonatologist or nurse wants your baby monitored for temperature and/or oxygen changes during breastfeeding. This won't interfere with the breastfeeding process itself, and it will protect your baby by sounding an alarm in case she is not responding well to the feeding. Be sure you're relaxed and that your baby is awake and alert. Ask the staff if there's a special nursing area for preemie moms, a private corner with an armchair or glider for you and your baby, or a privacy screen that can be put up to shield you, especially because it's best if you cuddle and nurse your baby skin to skin. Get comfortable propping your baby on pillows, supporting her head. Many new moms find a football hold comfortable as well as easy on the nipples. If your baby doesn't yet have a rooting reflex, she probably doesn't. Help her get started by placing your nipple with the areola into her mouth. Compress your breast lightly with your fingers to make it easier for her to latch on, and keep trying until she succeeds. Watch to be sure your baby is getting milk. Your breasts are used to mechanical pumping and will take a while to adjust to the different motions generated by your baby's mouth. At first, your baby's suckling will be rapid, an attempt to stimulate letdown. Then, as the milk is let down, your baby will slow down her suck and switch to a suckle-swallow pattern. If your baby doesn't seem interested in your breasts, try expressing a few drops of milk into her mouth to give her a taste of what's in store. Nurse your baby for as long as she's willing to stay at the breast. Keep her on your breast until she's stopped active suckling for at least 2 minutes. Small preemies may nurse for close to an hour before being satisfied. Don't be discouraged if the first session or first several sessions seem unproductive. Many full-term babies take a while to catch on, and preemies deserve at least the same chance. Still having trouble? Ask for help. Ask that any feedings at which you can't nurse be given by gavage, through the nose, rather than by bottle. If human milk fortifier or other fortification is given to your baby to supplement the breast milk, ask that it, too, be given by gavage or by the supplemental nursing system. You'll be able to tell how well your baby is doing on the breast by following her daily weigh-in. If she continues gaining about 1 to 2% of her body weight daily, or about 3.5 to 7.5 ounces a week, she'll be doing fine. By the time she reaches her original due date, she should be approaching the weight of a full-termer, somewhere around 6 to 8 pounds. Do keep in mind that breastfed preemies, as with term infants, will gain a little more slowly than formula-fed ones. Handling a tiny baby.
So far, I've handled our baby only through the portholes of his isolate, but I'm worried about how well I'll be able to handle him when he finally comes home.
When your baby finally makes that long-anticipated trip home, he'll probably seem pudgy and sturdy to you, rather than tiny and fragile. After all, depending on how small he was when he arrived, he may have doubled his birth weight when he hits 4 or 5 pounds, the average weight at discharge for preemies. And chances are you won't have any more trouble caring for him than most new parents have caring for their full-term babies. In fact, if you have a chance to do some baby care at the hospital, something you should be encouraged to do, especially when it comes to his specialized care, in the weeks before your baby's homecoming, you'll actually be ahead of the new parent curve. which is not to say it will be easy. It rarely is for new parents, whether the bundle they're bringing home is preemie or full term. If you're wondering how well you and your baby will do without a nurse or neonatologist looking over your shoulder, be assured that hospitals don't send home babies who are still in need of full-time professional care. Any care that you'll need to provide at home, beyond the baby basics, the staff will prepare you for. And if they don't give you the instructions and preparation you need, ask for them. Also ask about getting infant CPR training before you take baby home, an important skill for any new parent, but especially one of a preemie. To help parents feel more confident before discharge, most NICUs offer parents the opportunity to spend a night with their baby in a family room close to the nursery, but without any nursery staff supervision, on their own, but with backup a call light away. If you're still feeling overwhelmed at the thought of going it alone by the time your baby's getting ready for discharge, especially if he's being sent home with an assortment of medical apparatus, such as breathing monitors and oxygen hoods, consider hiring a baby nurse who has experience with preemies and their care to help out for the first week or two, finances permitting.
Sending baby home. After spending many weeks there, the NICU may begin to feel like a second home, and the staff like a second family. Still, you're probably more than ready for discharge day and that momentous homecoming you've eagerly been waiting for. Chances are, it will come at approximately the same time it would have if baby had arrived full term, at 40 weeks, though occasionally a baby may be discharged as early as 2 to 4 weeks before his or her due date, or might need to stay longer than the 40-week mark. Most hospitals don't have a specific wait requirement for discharge. Instead, babies are usually sent home once they are able to maintain normal body temperature in an open crib, have graduated to feeding by breast or bottle only, are gaining weight on breast or bottle, are breathing on their own, show no sign of apnea, pauses while breathing.
Permanent problems.
Though the doctor says our baby is doing well, I'm still afraid that she'll come through this with some kind of permanent problems.
One of the greatest miracles of modern medicine is the rapidly increasing survival rate for premature infants. At one time, a baby weighing in at 1,000 grams, about 2 pounds, 3 ounces, had no chance of making it. Now, thanks to the advances in neonatology, many babies who were born even smaller than that can be expected to survive, which means the odds of your baby coming home well from her hospital stay are very much in her favor. Overall, better than 2 out of 3 babies born prematurely will turn out to be perfectly normal, and most of the others will have only mild to moderate disabilities. Most often, the baby's IQ will be normal, though preterm infants do have an increased risk of learning challenges. The risks of permanent development issues are much greater for those who are born at 23 to 25 weeks and or weigh less than 25 ounces. Still, of the 40% of these infants who survive, more than half do well. As your baby grows, it will be important to keep in mind that she'll have some catching up to do before her development reaches the normal range for her birth age. Her progress is likely to follow more closely that of babies of her adjusted age. If she was very small or had serious complications during the neonatal period, she is very likely to lag behind her corrected age mates too, particularly in motor development. It may also be slower going in the neuromuscular department. Some preemies may not lose those telltale newborn reflexes, such as the Moro, tonic neck, or grasp reflexes as early as term infants do, even taking adjusted age into account. Or their muscle tone may be weak, in some cases causing the head to be floppy, in other cases causing the legs to be stiffer than normal, and the toes to point. Though such signs may signal something's wrong in full-term babies, they're usually nothing to worry about in preterms, but do have them evaluated by the doctor. Slow developmental progress is definitely to be expected in a preemie and is not usually a cause for concern. If, however, your baby seems not to be making any progress week to week, month to month, or if she seems unresponsive when she's not ill, speak to her doctor. If a problem is discovered, the early diagnosis could lead to early treatment, which may make a tremendous difference in the long term.
For siblings, the littlest sib. Wondering what, if anything, you should tell your older child about your new premature baby? Your first impulse might be to try to protect a big sib, especially one who's still pretty young, by not saying much at all about the baby's condition. But even very young children pick up more than the adults around them usually give them credit for, and without comforting context, stress signals can be especially unsettling and scary. Why is everyone distracted? Why are routines being disrupted? Why are mommy and daddy so stressed out? And where is the baby if it's not still in mommy's belly? The imagined can actually be more frightening for a young child than the reality, and what he or she doesn't know can hurt more than it has to. Instead, give your older child some very basic facts about what's going on with the new baby. Explain that the baby came out of mommy too soon, before growing enough, and has to stay in a special crib in the hospital until he or she is big enough to come home. With the hospitals okay, take your older child for an initial visit, and if it goes well, and he or she seems eager, visit together regularly. Big sibs who are still little are just as likely to be fascinated by the wires and tubes as they are to be scared, particularly if adults set the right tone, confident and cheerful, rather than nervous and somber. Having the new older sib bring a present to place in the isolette will help him or her feel a part of the team caring for the new baby. If your older child would like to, and if you have the staff's permission, let him or her scrub up and then touch the baby through the portholes. Encourage the brand new big brother or sister to sing, talk to, and make eye contact with his or her brand new sibling. This early bonding, even through isolate walls, can help your older child feel closer to the baby when that homecoming finally takes place. Big Sib seems to want nothing to do with this extra tiny, extra needy new member of the family. That's fine too. As always, follow your child's lead. In the meantime, keep routines as close to normal as possible and make sure that anyone who is caring for your older child is familiar with favorite foods, books, music, toys, games, and of course, bedtime as usual. During times of change and stress, which your preemie stay in the NICU will inevitably be, the same old will be particularly comforting to a young, older sibling. Home care for preterm babies. Even once they've reached the age of full-term babies, preemies continue to need some special care. As you prepare to take your baby home, keep these tips in mind. Listen to the month-by-month chapters in this audiobook. They apply to your preterm baby as well as to full-termers, but remember to adjust for your baby's corrected age. Keep your home warmer than usual, but not overheated, at least 72 degrees or so, for the first few weeks that your baby is at home. The temperature regulating mechanism is usually functioning in premature infants by the time they go home, but because of their small size and greater skin surface in relation to fat, they may have difficulty keeping comfortable without a little help. In addition, having to expend a great many calories to keep warm could interfere with weight gain. If your baby seems unusually fussy, check the room temperature to see if it's warm enough. Feel baby's arms, legs, or the nape of the neck to be sure it isn't too cool in the room. But don't go overboard by overbundling your little baby. It's dangerous for a baby to be dressed too warmly while sleeping. Again, feel baby's arms, legs, or the nape of the neck to be sure he or she is at the right temperature, not too cool and not too warm. Buy diapers made for preemies. You can also buy baby clothes in preemie sizes. Just don't buy too many. Before you know it, they'll be outgrown. Ask the doctor if you should sterilize bottles, if you're giving them, between feedings by boiling them or running them through a hot dishwasher. Though sterilizing after each feeding may be an unnecessary precaution for a term baby, the doctor might recommend it for your preemie, who is more susceptible to infection. Continue for a few months, or until baby's doctor tells you it's no longer necessary. Sterilizing between uses might also be a must-do with breast pump parts, so ask the doctor about that as well. Microwave bags designed for sterilizing baby feeding equipment can make the job easier. Feed frequently and patiently. The smaller the baby, the tinier the tummy, which means that preemies may need a refill as often as every 2 hours, timed from the beginning of one feed to the start of the next. Feeding can be slow-going, too, especially with breastfed preemies, who may not be able to suckle as efficiently as full-termers. They may take longer, as long as an hour, to drink their fill at each feed. Let your extra little one take all the time he or she needs to feed. Feed extra, if your doctor tells you to. Some preemies need a little extra boost in the calorie department, so the doctor might suggest you add a small amount of extra formula powder to fortify bottles, or to include a small amount of cereal in the bottle after a certain age. Reminder, don't do this unless specifically recommended by the doctor for your bottle-fed baby. Ask the doctor about a multivitamin and iron supplement. Preemies can be at greater risk of becoming vitamin deficient than full-termers and may need this extra insurance. Don't start solids until your doctor gives the go-ahead. Generally, solids are introduced to a preterm infant when his or her weight reaches 13 to 15 pounds. When more than 32 ounces of formula is consumed daily for at least a week, and or when adjusted age is 6 months. Occasionally, when a baby is not satisfied with just formula or breast milk, solids may be started as early as 4 months adjusted age, assuming your baby is developmentally ready. Relax. Without a doubt, your baby has been through a lot, and so have you. But once your little bundle is home, try to put the experience behind both of you. As great as the impulse may be to hover or overprotect, aim instead to treat your preemie like the normal, healthy baby he or she is now.
Catching up.
Our son, who was born nearly 2 months early, seems very far behind compared with other four-month-olds. Will he ever catch up?
Your little guy's probably not behind at all. In fact, he's probably just where a baby conceived when he was should be. Traditionally, a baby's age is calculated from the day he was born. But this system is misleading when assessing the growth and development of premature infants, since it fails to take into account that at birth, they have not yet reached term. Your baby, for example, was just a little more than minus 2 months old at birth. At 2 months of age, he was, in terms of gestational age, calculated according to his original due date, equivalent to a newborn. At 4 months, he's more like a two-month-old. Keep this in mind when you compare him with other children his age, or with averages on development charts. For example, though the average baby may sit well at 7 months, your child may not do so until he's 9 months old, when he reaches his seventh-month corrected age. If he was very small or very ill in the newborn period, he's likely to sit even later. In general, you can expect motor development to lag more than the development of the senses, vision and hearing, for example. Experts use the gestational age, usually called adjusted or corrected age, in evaluating a premature child's developmental progress until he's 2 to 2.5 years old. After that point, the 2 months or so differential tends to lose its significance. There isn't, after all, much developmental difference between a child who is 4 years old and one who is 2 months shy of four. As your baby gets older, the gap between his adjusted age and his birth age will likely diminish and finally disappear, as will any developmental differences between him and his peers. Though occasionally, extra nurturing may be needed to bring a preemie to that point. In the meantime, if you feel more comfortable using his adjusted age with strangers, go ahead. They'll never know the difference. Certainly do so when looking at your baby's developmental progress. You can encourage motor development by placing your baby on his tummy, facing outward toward the room rather than toward the wall, as often and for as long as he'll put up with it, but only when he's carefully supervised. Since preemies and low birth weight babies spend most of their early weeks, sometimes months, on their backs in isolettes, they often resist this tummy-to-play position, but it's a necessary one for building arm and neck strength. Tummy time on your tummy or chest may be more fun for both of you. Plus, you'll both reap the benefits that come from such kangaroo care if you do it skin to skin.
Preemie vaccines. For most of your premature baby's first 2 years, his or her adjusted age will be the one that counts most, except in one area, immunizations. Most of a baby's vaccine schedule isn't delayed because of prematurity, so instead of receiving vaccines according to gestational age, he or she will receive them according to birth age. In other words, if your baby was born 2 months early, he or she will still get those first shots at age 2 months, not age 4 months. Even the hepatitis B vaccine, which is normally given at birth, isn't delayed for a preemie. The AAP recommends all babies, even premature ones, get vaccinated at birth or before the baby is discharged from the hospital to return home. Don't worry about your tiny baby's immune system not being mature enough or able to produce antibodies to the vaccines. Researchers have found that at 7 years, even children who were born extremely small have antibody levels similar to other children the same age.
Car seats.
My baby seems way too small for the infant car seat. Wouldn't she be safer in my arms?
It's not only unsafe, but illegal for a baby, premature or full term, to ride in somebody's arms rather than in a car seat. Every baby, no matter how tiny, must be buckled up safely, securely, and snugly each and every time she's in a moving vehicle. But parents of low birth weight babies often find that their especially little babies seem lost in a standard rear-facing infant car seat. The AAP recommends the following when choosing and using a car seat for your preemie. Select a car seat that will fit your baby. Choose an infant car seat, not a convertible seat, and look for one that has less than 5.5 inches from the crotch strap to the seat back. This will help keep your baby from slouching. Also look for one that measures less than 10 inches from the lowest harness strap position to the seat bottom, so that the harness won't cross over your baby's ears. Make it fit even better. Use the newborn insert that comes with the car seat. Most infant seats include one to cocoon your baby. If baby still seems too small to fit, roll a towel or small blanket and arrange it so that it pads the seat at the sides of her head. And if there's still a big gap between your baby's body and the harness, use a folded towel or blanket to fill it in, but don't place one under your baby. Also consider having a certified car seat installation technician check how your preemie fits into her car seat to make sure she's getting the support she needs and is seated safely, as well as to show you how to make any necessary adjustments. Search on nhtsa.gov/apps/cps/index.htm for a location near you. Some premature babies have trouble breathing in the semi-propped position the seat requires. One study has shown that these infants may show a decreased oxygen supply while riding in a car seat, and that this deficit may last for as long as 30 minutes or more afterward. Some may also experience short periods of apnea, breathing cessation in car seats. Make sure your baby is observed and monitored in the car seat by the hospital staff before going home. If she does experience breathing problems in a car seat, it's best to limit the amount of auto travel you do with her for the first month or two at home, or use an approved car bed, especially if she has had spells of apnea previously. Ask her doctor about monitoring her breathing when she's in an ordinary car seat, at least for a while, to see if she is experiencing any problems. The same breathing problems may occur in young premature babies in infant seats and baby swings, so don't use either without the doctor's approval.
All about health problems common in low birth weight babies.
Prematurity is risky business. Tiny bodies are not fully mature. Many systems, heat regulatory, respiratory, and digestive, for example, aren't yet fully operative. And not surprisingly, the risk of neonatal illness is increased. As the technology for keeping such babies alive improves, more attention is being given to these common preemie conditions, and completely successful treatment is becoming more and more the norm for many of them. New treatments are being developed almost daily, and so may not be detailed here. So be sure to ask your neonatologist or pediatrician about recent advances. The medical problems that most frequently complicate the lives of preterm infants include respiratory distress syndrome, RDS. Because of immaturity, the premature lung often lacks pulmonary surfactant, a liquid that coats the inside of the lungs and helps keep the air sacs, alveoli, in the lungs from collapsing. Without surfactant, the tiny air sacs collapse like deflating balloons each time baby breathes out, forcing him or her to work harder and harder to breathe. This is called RDS. Interestingly, babies who have undergone severe stress before birth, usually during labor and delivery, are more likely to have surfactant, since the stress appears to speed lung maturation. RDS, the most common lung disease of premature infants, was once frequently fatal, but more than 80% of babies who develop RDS today survive, thanks to an increased understanding of the syndrome and new ways of treatment. Extra oxygen is given via a plastic oxygen hood or via continuous positive airway pressure, CPAP, which is administered through tubes that fit into the nose or mouth. The continuous pressure keeps the lungs from collapsing until the body begins producing sufficient surfactant, usually in 3 to 5 days. With severe RDS, a breathing tube is placed in the mouth and the baby is put on a respirator. Artificial surfactant is then administered directly to the baby's lungs via the breathing tube. Sometimes when lung immaturity is detected in utero, RDS can be prevented entirely by the prenatal administration of a hormone to the mother to speed lung maturation and production of surfactant. A mild case of RDS usually lasts for the first week of life, though if the baby must be placed on a respirator, the recovery may be much slower. Babies with severe cases of RDS may be at an increased risk of colds or respiratory illnesses during their first 2 years of life, and may be more likely to experience childhood wheezing or asthma-like illnesses and be hospitalized in their first 2 years. Bronchopulmonary dysplasia, BPD. In some babies, particularly those born very small, long-term oxygen administration and mechanical ventilation used to help treat RDS appear to combine with lung immaturity to cause BPD, or chronic lung disease. The condition, which results from lung injury, is usually diagnosed when a newborn still requires increased oxygen after reaching 36 weeks gestation, and lung changes such as scarring are seen on X-rays. Babies with BPD have to work harder than other babies to breathe, and breastfeeding or bottle feeding makes them work especially hard. Because they end up using so many calories when they exert themselves to breathe, and because they have a harder time eating, babies with BPD often have nutritional challenges such as poor weight gain. BPD is a chronic condition, and the only cure is giving it time, since over time, new healthy lung tissue will grow and the symptoms will ease. That's why treatment is only to lessen the symptoms of the condition while the lungs grow and mature. Treatment can include extra oxygen, continued mechanical ventilation, medications such as bronchodilators to help open the airways, or steroids to reduce inflammation, and medication to prevent RSV, respiratory syncytial virus, prevention medication. Some babies will require oxygen at home and all require a high caloric intake to improve growth. Happily, most babies with BPD outgrow their symptoms and lead healthy lives. Apnea of prematurity. Though apnea, periods when breathing stops, can occur in any newborn, the problem is much more common among premature infants. Apnea of prematurity occurs when immature respiratory and nervous systems cause preterm babies to stop breathing for short periods. It is diagnosed when a baby has such periods that last more than 20 seconds, or shorter ones that are associated with bradycardia, a slowing of the heart rate. It is also considered apnea if the cessation of breathing is associated with the baby's color changing to pale, purplish, or blue. Almost all babies born at 30 weeks or less will experience apnea. Apnea is treated by stimulating the infant to start rebreathing by rubbing or patting the baby's skin, administering medications such as caffeine or theophylline, or using continuous positive airway pressure, CPAP, in which oxygen is delivered under pressure through little tubes into the baby's nose. Apnea of prematurity is not associated with SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, and many babies will outgrow it by the time they reach 36 weeks gestation. If a baby has breathing pauses after apnea has been outgrown, it is not considered apnea of prematurity and is more likely caused by some other problem. Patent ductus arteriosus. While baby is still in the uterus, a duct called the ductus arteriosus connects the aorta, the artery through which blood from the heart is sent to the rest of the body, and the main pulmonary artery, the one leading to the lungs. This duct shunts blood away from the non-functioning lungs and is kept open during pregnancy by high levels of prostaglandin E, one of a group of fatty acids produced by the body in the blood. Normally, levels of prostaglandin E fall at delivery, and the duct begins to close within a few hours. But in about half of very small premature babies, those weighing less than 3 pounds, 5 ounces, and in some larger babies, levels of prostaglandin E don't drop, and the duct remains open or patent. In many cases, there are no symptoms except a heart murmur and a little shortness of breath on exertion and/or blueness of the lips, and the duct closes by itself soon after birth. Occasionally, however, severe complications occur. Treatment with an anti-prostaglandin drug, indomethacin, is often successful in closing the duct. When it isn't, surgery will do the job. Retinopathy of prematurity, ROP. The blood vessels in the eyes are not fully developed until about 34 weeks gestation. When babies are born too early, the immature blood vessels in the retinas sometimes begin to grow too quickly, damaging the retina. Retinopathy of prematurity, ROP, is the name for the improper growth of the blood vessels on the retina and the damage caused by that growth. In most preemies, the growth of the retinal blood vessels will slow down on its own, and vision will develop normally. The incidence of ROP increases as birth weight decreases. More than half of babies born weighing less than 2 pounds 12 ounces, 1,250 grams, will develop ROP, most often mild. Severe retinopathy of prematurity is largely a problem of those babies born before 28 weeks. Most cases of ROP will get better on their own, requiring no treatment, and the babies will recover with no lasting visual problems. But since ROP can sometimes lead to scarring and distortion of the retina, increased risk of nearsightedness, wandering eye, involuntary rhythmic movements of the eye, and even blindness, a newborn with ROP will be seen by a pediatric ophthalmologist. Infants with severe ROP may require treatment, laser therapy, cryotherapy, or surgery to stop the progression of the abnormal vessels. Intraventricular hemorrhage, IVH. IVH, or bleeding in the brain, is extremely common among premature infants because the vessels in their developing brains are very fragile and can bleed easily. Intraventricular hemorrhage most often affects preemies weighing less than 3 pounds, 5 ounces, usually within the first 72 hours of life. The most severe hemorrhages, which affect only 5 to 10% of extremely premature babies, require close observation to correct any further problems that develop. For example, hydrocephalus, blockage of spinal fluid. Regular follow-up ultrasounds are usually ordered for such hemorrhages until they are resolved. Unfortunately, there is no way to stop an intraventricular hemorrhage once it has begun. In mild cases, and most cases are, the blood is absorbed by the body. In a less mild case, the treatment targets symptoms of the bleed instead of the bleed itself. The good news is that in most mild cases, the follow-up ultrasound of the head is normal, and the baby's development is normal for a preterm baby. Necrotizing enterocolitis, NEC. NEC is a condition where the intestines become infected and can begin to die. If the disease is not treated promptly, a hole can form through the bowel wall, spilling the bowel's contents into the abdominal cavity. No one knows for sure what causes NEC, but because the more premature a baby is, the greater the risk of NEC. Doctors speculate that the intestines of very premature babies are not developed enough to completely handle digestion. Delaying feedings doesn't seem to prevent the condition, but babies fed breast milk usually are at less risk of NEC. Breast milk has protective factors that encourage good intestinal development and reduce the amount of harmful bacteria in the intestines. The symptoms of this serious bowel disease include abdominal distension, vomiting, apnea, and blood in the stool. A baby with necrotizing enterocolitis is usually put on intravenous feedings to let the bowels rest, and antibiotics to treat the infection. If there is serious deterioration of the intestine, surgery is usually performed to remove the damaged portion. Unfortunately, preemies who are medically or surgically treated for NEC may have growth delays, trouble absorbing nutrients, and trouble with their livers and gallbladders. NEC also seems to increase the risk of developmental delays. Anemia. Many premature infants develop anemia, too few red blood cells, because their red blood cells, like those of all babies, have a shorter life than red blood cells of adults. They make few new red blood cells in the first few weeks of life, like all infants, and the frequent blood samples that must be taken from the baby to do necessary laboratory tests make it difficult for red blood cells to replenish. Anemia is also more common in preemies because they missed out on the transfer of iron from their moms that happens during the last weeks of pregnancy, and because the bone marrow process that makes new red blood cells is immature in preemies. Mild anemia may not need treatment if the number of red blood cells is enough to carry oxygen to meet the baby's needs. More serious anemia is usually treated by blood transfusions, iron supplementation, and limiting the amount of blood drawn to only what is necessary. Since preemies, whether they're anemic or not, are born with low levels of iron, They are usually given iron supplements to help build up the reserves necessary to produce red blood cells. Infection. Premature infants are most vulnerable to a variety of infections because they are born before the transfer of disease-fighting antibodies from the mother that normally occurs toward the end of pregnancy. Preemies also have an immature immune system, making it more difficult to fight germs, including those that are inadvertently introduced via feeding tubes, IV lines, and blood tests. Among the infections preemies are more likely to come down with are pneumonia, urinary tract infections, sepsis, infection of the body or bloodstream, and meningitis. Babies whose blood, urine, or spinal fluid cultures come back positive for signs of infection are treated with a full course of IV antibiotics, which usually helps resolve the infection and puts baby on the right track back to health again. Jaundice. Premature babies are much more likely to develop jaundice than our full-term infants. Also, their bilirubin levels, the measure of jaundice, are likely to be higher and the jaundice longer lasting. Hypoglycemia. Premature and low birth weight babies often have low blood sugar or hypoglycemia. But since the brain depends on blood glucose as its main source of fuel, it's crucial that a baby's blood sugar gets regulated as soon as possible so that it doesn't lead to serious and rare complications such as brain damage. Problem is, hypoglycemia may not be obvious in newborn babies because the symptoms are hard to pinpoint. Luckily, a simple blood test for blood glucose levels can diagnose hypoglycemia, and treatment is straightforward and works well. Treatment includes a rapid-acting source of glucose, which may be as simple as giving baby a glucose-water mixture intravenously, or early feedings of formula or breast milk, if baby is well enough to feed. Breast milk is considered as beneficial as formula in treating hypoglycemia. Blood glucose levels are closely monitored after treatment to see if the hypoglycemia occurs again. And if it does, treatment will resolve the issue once again with no long-lasting negative results.
CPR training. Don't go home without it. Didn't have a chance to take infant CPR classes before your baby arrived because your baby arrived too soon? Now's the time, before you bring your very little bundle home. It's a skill no parent hopes to use, but one that every parent should know, particularly every parent of a preemie. Even if it's not required for discharge at your baby's NICU, it sometimes is, make sure you ask for it.
Rehospitalization. Happily, most premature babies who go home from the hospital stay home. But sometimes the preemie ends up back in the hospital during the first year, usually for the treatment of a respiratory illness or dehydration. When this happens, it's particularly tough on the parents who have been struggling to put the time spent in the NICU behind them and begin a normal life with their babies. Memories and all too familiar emotions may come flooding back if your baby is rehospitalized. From feelings of guilt, what did I do wrong, to feelings of fear and panic, what happens if my baby gets sicker? After finally having your baby home and under your care, you may also feel as though you've lost control again. Keep in mind that a hospital readmission is absolutely no reflection on the care you've been giving your baby at home or on your parenting skills. Preemies in general are more vulnerable health-wise than full-termers, which means even little problems may require the extra medical attention and extra precautions that only a hospital setting can offer. Try to remember, too, that rehospitalizations usually don't last long, and that, like your very little one's stay in the NICU as a newborn, the stay in the hospital more likely to be in the PICU or pediatric intensive care unit, will also come to an end, at at which point you'll be able to bring your healthier baby home once again. This time, hopefully for good.
This has been an Audible Studios production of What to Expect the First Year, 3rd Edition. Written by Heidi Murkoff with Sharon Mazel. Performed by Heidi Murkoff with Megan Holloway, James Patrick Cronin, Christine Vam, Vanessa Johansson, Almarie Guerra, Sophia Willingham, Tanis Peranto, Inez del Castillo, Emma Bing, Matt Viro, and Jasmine Walker. Executive producers Susie Bright and Mike Charzik. Producer Kat Lambrix. Edited and mastered by Mark Galoop. Copyright 1989, 1996, 2003, 2010, 2014 by What to Expect, LLC. Sound recording copyright 2019 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.